There's more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous people who need no repentance, Jesus said. And this is what he said in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 15, talking about a father and two sons in a family business. Last Sunday, we talked about the younger son. How many of you are a younger son? Not necessarily just, yeah, a younger son, yeah. I'm a younger son. I'm a middle son, but I'm a younger son. And some of you maybe have a family with just two boys, but I can't think of one offhand, so I won't use you for an illustration. But I want to tell a little bit about my own family, because, you see, each of us grows up in a different family. Each child in a family grows up in a different family. Even when there hasn't been any family breakdown because of divorce or death, each child's experience of their family is unique. Yeah, that's me with the kind of lean on the second from the right. And my three brothers, my dad, and our 58 Delray Chevrolet. Yeah, after big flood, yeah. You know, every one of us grew up in a different family. It's four boys. That's our trick horse, Diamond. He was a circus pony, and Dad bought him, and that was his one trick. His other one is he could play dead, and, you know, that's the two tricks he had. But we each grew up in a different family. 12 years between the oldest and the youngest sibling. That's my dad up there in the far left, and my grandfather, grandmother, his parents. Didn't realize until I saw this picture how short my grandpa had gotten. That was about 1970. Oh, yeah, those are great days. Those glasses are coming back. Those glasses. Yeah, they got to be coming back there. Yeah. There was one girl in our family, four boys and one girl, and I realized I hadn't had any pictures that included her, so I put a picture in with her, two boys, my dad, and you know what? Five kids, we all grew up in a different family. For about 10 years, my next youngest brother, Bruce, was part of this church here, lived in town as a truck driver, and some of you got to know him, and one of my friends said, talking to Bruce and talking to me about the family background, you would never guess we were talking about the same family. And we were the two, three and a half years apart in age. We just all grew up in different families. We all see things differently. In my own family, it was the before and after my father was disabled. And there was my older brother and sister experienced my dad as a hardworking person. And as they left home, he became disabled. And my younger brother, two of them, only knew a father who was disabled and unable to work full-time. And I straddled both eras. I say I grew up alone in a family of five because they each were a pair, and I was in the middle, and that's how it was. And so I had a different relationship with my father than any of the other five. But you could say that about any of us, right? So you grew up in a different home. I mean, Rayanne and Janet grew up in the same home, but they grew up in a different home. Verna and Gary were so much more lenient with Rayanne. And poor Jason, the oldest. The oldest always has to toe the line in everything. And they become perfect. And then they struggle with perfectionism. Maybe, I don't know about Jason. We grew up in different families. Well, there's a story in the Bible that we're going to look at, the second part of it. The story, it's often called the prodigal son. It's really the story about the waiting father. In God's family, God doesn't change, but our experience of him varies from person to person. We may truly know something about God, but we may also project a certain image onto him which may not accord with the truth. Well, it can happen in a lot of ways. But your experience of Jesus Christ and his Father and the Father of all who put their trust in him is somewhat different from the person beside you, though they have put their trust in the same Lord. Because our experiences, the way God enters our lives, even that song we sang, Blessed Be Your Name, in the land that is plentiful, etc., and then on the road marked with suffering, there's different degrees of joy and exuberance and sadness and loss the different ones of us go through. Man, that's okay. You are unique. Your relationship to God is unique. If you have one. God doesn't change, but our experience of Him does change, varies from person to person. What's important is that we remain open to receive the true picture of what God is like. Let go of mere imaginings. I used a picture on the screen last Sunday, and it's there again entirely on the screen on the one side from a painting by Rembrandt of the prodigal son, the son returning home. And it's the reason I have it is because Henri Nouwen wrote a book about this parable using Rembrandt's painting as some inspiration for reflection on it. And if it moves forward a little bit, I guess I'll talk about the younger son first. Just a review from last week. In this painting, the older brother is there. He's the one looking there. In the Bible, he's not presented as right there when the son comes back. But in the painting, to communicate something, the older son is there on the side. How do you see him? He's got his hands together. He's got his shawl around him. He's got a look on his face. And what would you say he's thinking? Well, we'll get to that too, because the Bible reveals some of what he's thinking. But the contrast of two sons, one father, two different experiences of him. There is a tension in the story that Jesus told, and there is a tension portrayed in the painting by Rembrandt. And Jesus addresses the tension. But the painting, like the story that Jesus told, leaves us with an unanswered question. The question is, will both sons accept the Father's mercy? Yeah. And so now you know the whole point of this story. The unfinished story. The unanswered question. Will both the younger and older son experience the Father's mercy? Listen as I read the second part of this story Jesus told. After there is such exuberant dancing and celebration when the younger son is welcomed back by the father. Starting in Luke 15, verse 25. And in this version, the first word is, meanwhile. Don't you like that when you get to a story and you find that word, meanwhile? Back at the ranch. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, the older son was in the field. See? When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. In a minute, we're going to try to figure out where we fit on the spectrum between younger son and older son in this story. One of the litmus tests may be how you responded to how we sang that song, Oh Happy Day. Three children tried to move with the dancing. I can't dance. But Lindsay can. And that was an expression of joy, but some of you didn't like that. I'm just guessing. But some of you really liked that. I'm just guessing again. But this older son would not have liked that. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So what does he do? Oh, a party. I got to come join it. How many of you are like that? Yeah. Okay. So he didn't go in. He called out one of the servants and asked him, what's going on here? Don't you think he said it something like that? See, the younger son had received his inheritance and squandered it all. But that meant the older son had everything else. It was all his. And though his father was still alive, the older son would now be running things. Or so he thought. And so he could ask the servant, what's going on here? Your brother has come, he replied. The servant has no idea. The servant can't see that picture. The servant doesn't know that the older brother is feeling the way he's feeling. So the servant just says, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. And you imagine the servant kind of excited. You just assume the brother is going to be excited. to have his brother back. I can't tell any stories about my three sons because it cost me $5 if I mention a certain name of them. But sons and brothers aren't always so excited to have their brother back. But sometimes they are. But this one wasn't. The older brother, this is verse 28, became angry and refused to go in. Okay, so go ahead. Pretend you're the older brother. Give me an expression or a posture that would reflect how he was right there. Okay, you're the older brother. Give me a posture or a facial expression. How is he right there? What are you going to do? He was angry and refused to go in. Oh, yeah, okay, there I see some. What are your arms? First thing you got to do is fold your arms when you're angry and refuse something, right? Whether they're 1 or 2 years old, they learn this already, don't they? They fold their arms. Can you fold your arms both ways? Oh, that's okay. Some can. He was angry and he refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends." Who'd want to celebrate with that guy? Sorry. "But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him." "My son," the father said, "you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." The younger son returned home driven by desperate need, but also drawn by memory and hope. He remembered how well his father had supplied the needs of his servants, let alone cared for he and his brother. And he hoped that there would be mercy still there for him now in his time of need. When the younger son came home, he pretended no claim on his father. He squandered his premature inheritance, and his only hope was mercy. And it seemed to take him reaching rock bottom before he could begin to appreciate the good things about his father, before he could recognize the kindness and mercy that his father displayed. His hope that propelled him towards home was based on a truer read of his father's character. As we said last week, replacing misconceptions, beginning to see the truth about his father. Laying aside the false and wrong thoughts he had previously harbored. These are the kind of thoughts he had. His father didn't want him to have any fun. Thoughts that his father made him work too hard. Thoughts that his father was a weak man and didn't even have the guts to stand up against him when he demanded an early inheritance. Thoughts that his father favored his older brother, who was such a goody-goody, never got into trouble. These were the thoughts he had had. But they were not on the mark about his father. And when he first began to remember and appreciate that his father was kind to others, he began to know his father in truth. "Maybe I was wrong about Dad," he said to himself when he finally came to himself. He really did care for his workers. Just that. "Are you a boss? Supervisor? Have responsibility for somebody else? You're leaving your mark." The younger son found an abundant welcome from his father and more than he could ever have dreamed of. But that other son, the stay-at-home older brother, what about him? Comparisons are inevitable among siblings. Fit a number of them already this morning. The younger son is portrayed as a fun-loving, happy-go-lucky kind of guy, and the older brother is portrayed as an industrious, nose-to-the-grindstone, get-the-work-done kind of guy. The younger brother reveals a rebellious streak, while the older one was the compliant child. The younger one had to kick off the traces and sow his wild oats, The older brother responsibly shouldered his burdens when the younger one left. And then something happened which threw the family system into a spin. The younger son was converted. Converted. You know, do it every time. He'll do it every time. Doesn't matter whether it's a son or a wife or husband somebody in the family is converted. The word just means turned around and headed back home to the Father. That's just, the word conversion just means turn it around. And when there's somebody converted, it messes up the whole family. It does. It shouldn't. It does. Because everybody's used to functioning the way they functioned before. It's just like when an alcoholic stops acting like an alcoholic and finds deliverance and freedom, possibly through AA, and begins to change. The family dynamics are such that it almost tries to force, say, the father back into being an alcoholic, because then everybody knew what they couldn't count on. But now they had no idea what to expect, because there was a change, a drastic change, and that's what happened in this family. The younger son was converted. And that's what threw the older brother into a tumble. Turned his world upside down. Just two brothers. And comparing and competing among them just about destroyed the family. So look at things through the eyes of the older brother, though. Let's give him a bit of a fair shake. I haven't been kind to him, have I? I might be too much like him. Through the eyes of the older brother, this did not look fair. It was not fair at all how his father was treating his kid brother. And you know this, when he says, "Look, old man," it's one way of translating what he said to his father, "Look, old man." Oh, he'd never talked back to his father in his life. And now he says something like that. "Don't you know, old man?" he said. He was going to set things straight. How long had there been this anger just inside of him, waiting to come out? How long had he been keeping a lid on it? Maybe he didn't even know it. But you can feel that the frustration was there at his station in life. "Don't you know, old man, how this son of yours wasted all your wealth chasing women? And now what happens? He comes crawling home and you throw a party for him. And you've never done that for me." Hey, if you're taking any counseling, receiving counseling, or given some, one of the things you probably have learned that some of the words that are not true are "never" and "always." Have you learned that? He never takes the garbage out. She always nags. Okay, so those words aren't true. Never and always. When we're talking about people, person-to-person counseling. He says, "You never threw me a party." Do you think that was true? Do you think the father had never done anything to celebrate something of his son's achievements or his son's status? Or was it maybe that his older son was too tight with his money and wouldn't permit the family inheritance to be spent on a foolish party? Could that be it? And so the father then, to please his older son, didn't have an extravagant party for him. He knew the younger son would appreciate it. Maybe that was it. Or sometimes our memory is just an unreliable indicator of what really happened. You just get back together, family gathering time, and the stories that are told, very little resemblance to the truth of what happened at any time. And memory is a very unreliable indicator sometimes. And he says, "You never threw me a party." Well, whatever the case, and whatever the father had done at this moment, it didn't count. It just didn't count for one reason or another. And when we're comparing ourselves with others, we conveniently discount things that don't help our cause. I said earlier the younger son would have thought the father was favoring the older son when he had misconceptions about the father, because the older son was so good. And he never got into trouble, and the younger son would have had to deal with getting punished for the troubles he got into. But the older brother thought the father was playing favorites with the younger son. Imagine that. You can't win. You try, as a dad and mom, you try to be perfectly fair with your kids, don't you? Yeah, I don't anymore. Sorry, that's the truth. Because you try to be perfectly fair, and they don't perceive it that way anyways. So may as well just do what needs doing for each one. You be perfectly fair. And both brothers think the father was playing favorites on the other. The older son knew something truly. He knew something about the younger son that was true, that the younger son did not deserve this party. That the younger son did not deserve such a welcome back. He knew that. And you know what? That was true. But the flip side of that is that the older son thought he did deserve all the father's attention and mercy. That he deserved it. That he didn't need mercy. Because why do you need mercy if you've never done anything wrong? It's true that this older son had never left home, but he was nevertheless living in a far country in his heart. His heart was so far away from the heart of his father. Now, let's take a few moments here to reflect on this. And this son, this compliant, obedient, dutiful, faithful, keeping things going kind of person. Is this you? Now, some of you raised your hands earlier that you would have barged right into the party. It's probably not you, okay? You're off the hook here. But there's only three or four people that raised their hand at that point, so that concerns me in a church of older brothers. Is this you? Compliant, obedient, dutiful, faithful, keeping things going? You're the one we can count on? You are pretty good. You don't do a lot of very bad stuff. You're not like your brother or sister that always has to be rescued out of trouble. Is that you? But you don't feel very close at all to your Father in heaven. You think you should be getting more recognition, even though when somebody tells you they appreciate what you're doing, you just shrug it off anyways and say, well, I'm just a servant, I'm just doing what the Master's bidding. You know what our mistake is? If we're this kind of person, our mistake is this, thinking we have to earn our Father's love. Big mistake. How do you do it? You destroy it by earning it. How do you receive mercy? You can't if you wait until you deserve mercy. How do you deserve mercy? You can't. You cannot deserve mercy. You can only need mercy. You may find mercy, but you can't deserve mercy any more than you can make yourself worthy of God's love. Can't do it. And that's the big mistake. Thinking we have to be good enough. Thinking that we have to try. And we try. And we try. And we succeed. And we fail. And we fail. And we try. But we know we don't measure up. Now, I said every child grows up in a different family. Well, there's probably one aspect of our family growing up that most of us siblings or all of us have shared. That we didn't measure up. The feeling that there wasn't possibility of doing well enough to earn your father's acceptance and merit. That has little or more or less basis in reality, but it was a common feeling. And you know what? It's probably in a very common feeling for many people that they couldn't measure up to their parents' expectations, that they weren't good enough, that they had to try harder. Bless you and bless your parents if you have a different story than that. Which son knew the heart of his father more truly? And which son was still mired in misconceptions? Well, to ask the question as I am asking it, you know that the younger son somehow was connecting with his father's heart more truly than this, his older brother. All these years, that's what the father said, all these years you have been with me. And all that I have is yours. So you want to have a party. Who is stopping you? Who's stopping you? Did the older brother really know his own father? You know, all the time that the father was waiting for the younger son, did the older son suspect something? Did he have a suspicion about what might happen if the younger son traipsed home one day? Did he have reason to think that his father would relent and show mercy to his kid brother? In the back of his mind, the older son, when he saw the actual scenario worked out and the younger brother home and welcomed and feasting and dancing and celebration, he said, I knew it in his mind. I knew it. That's just like him. He did know something about his father, but he didn't like that. He didn't like it because his world consisted of performance and effective and measuring up and being successful and earning respect. And none of this weakness about mercy. He knew this. Now that younger son did not deserve another chance. He'd had his inheritance. He'd messed up with that. And the older brother, as far as he's concerned, well, too bad. Too bad. But this one characteristic of his father obviously really annoyed the older son, didn't it? Look, old man, he said. Really annoyed him. It's not the first time. It's not the last time somebody gets upset about a God who shows mercy. It's unimaginable, isn't it? How can you be upset about somebody who shows mercy? But it's happened before. And it happens still. Remember that familiar story about a man swallowed by a great fish? Later spit up on the shore of the Mediterranean, went to preach to Nineveh. And that happened, I don't know, what was it, 800-900 years before Jesus was born? The man's name was Jonah. Stories in the Bible. And we always read the stories, Jonah was running away from God. Well, how can you run away from God? Do you know what was propelling him? God, he knew God had told him, you go to the city of Nineveh, 120,000 people, you preach to them judgment, that judgment is coming on the city in 40 days. That was his sum total of his message. That resonated with Jonah, like an older brother. I can do that. But here's what problem. He had a suspicion that God might use that so the Ninevites would repent and turn and God would show them mercy. And that is what Jonah did not want anything to do with, and why he got on a ship and headed as far away from Nineveh as he could go. That was why. He didn't have any problem with God sending judgment on these Ninevites. They were enemies. What good had they ever done for Israel? But he had a problem with God's mercy. Well, you know the story, don't you? God got hold of him anyways. A lot of lessons you could draw from that, I suppose, but maybe turn before the fish gets you, maybe? I don't know. But don't let Kinesu get on you. Big fish Kinesu get on you. Yeah. Whatever lesson you want. But so God got Jonah where he wanted Jonah. Obedient, outwardly, went to Nineveh. I don't know what he looked like after 3 days with the stomach acid of a fish's stomach, working on him and the seaweed and whatever. VeggieTales version is pretty fun to watch about the fish slappers. You know, but he went there and he did what God told him to do. Preach for 40 days. 40 days he preached. Judgment's coming. And sure enough, they repented. Do you know how the story ends? What did Jonah do? After he preaches, he goes, sits up on a hill that he can see the whole city. Why does he do that? Well, how is he sitting? He's going to sit like this. Does that look familiar? What is he wanting? He's saying, God, let it fall. Fire and brimstone. Bring it on. There are churches like that still today. There are Christians like that still today. Sometimes preach in certain churches, you talk about hell and damnation and suffering, and you get amens. What for? It's tragic. But he didn't want any part of the Ninevites being rescued. And they were saved because of his preaching. How could he go back home and face his friends? Prejudiced, redneck friends. Prejudice, probably the hardest sin in the world to root out. The older brother was in the company of Jonah. He knew that his father would forgive a repentant son. And he hated what he saw. Mercy was weakness. Forgiveness was not fairness. That younger son should be made to pay. Do you think the older brother might have accepted the proposition that he came back as a servant? No, I think he probably would have. After leaving him on the hook for a long time. Okay, you got to leave the guy on the hook outside, cooling his heels, waiting to see what your answer will be. And then, could you imagine the kind of tasks the older brother would assign to the younger one as his servant? His slave. How many of you would like to be absolute servant to one of your siblings? But the father welcomed the younger one back as a son. Now, the younger son had likely caught a bit of his father's generosity, but he didn't have his father's responsibility and accountability. So the younger son, in a generous spirit, he just squandered everything when he went away to a far country. Instead of just living generously, he just squandered everything. But it could be that because possessions and things weren't that important, that he just shared everything he had, and then it was gone. So there's no accountability, no responsibility. But maybe he understood a bit of the father's generosity. But one thing the older son never understood. Or did he? We don't know. We don't know. Jesus didn't finish the story. Simple generosity, an indicator of knowing God's grace. Not being more generous than others, but being generous because we share the Father's heart. Simple generosity, an indicator of knowing God's grace. That's what it means to share the grace of God, being generous. More generous than we would be apart from God's grace. Some Christians are very prickly. You notice that? Some Christians are very hard to get close to. I've said it before, I like the quote from C.S. Lewis, what he said about things like that. And he says, being a Christian doesn't make you better than other people. But being a child of God makes you better than you would be if you weren't a child of God. So thank God that person is so far along, at least, that they'd be so much worse if they didn't have God with them. Some people start from way back when they're coming through to the kingdom, okay? That's okay. That's okay. In reading Henri Nouwen's book on this parable and the painting by Rembrandt, I saw for the first time that the father was waiting for both his sons. The father was waiting for both his sons to come home. He knew he didn't have his older son's heart. He knew. He ran out to meet the younger son on the road when he saw him coming. And he goes out to meet his older son in the dark outside the place of partying, because the older son refused to come in. He goes out to meet him and to plead with him. The father's arms are open wide for both his children. Will the older son relent? Will he respond to his father's impassioned plea? Will he too be converted? Will he too be converted? My son, the father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. The story remains unfinished for a good reason. The notorious sinners have been converting to become followers of Jesus. That's how this chapter opens. They were dedicating their lives to God. They were publicly proclaiming a change of heart and their conversion through baptisms. The younger son had truly come home and found a welcome in the Son of God. The notorious sinners. But who were the older sons? Well, they're also listed at the beginning of the chapter. They're described as the religious leaders of Israel, the teachers of the word. And this story was primarily for their benefit. It was to encourage the notorious sinners who were converting, but it was primarily a word and a plea and an invitation to these older son types. Would they recognize their own need for God's mercy? Would they admit, let go of their prejudices and misconceptions about God? Would they stop their painful trying to measure up and instead accept God's grace? Would they too turn and be converted? The most difficult conversion in the world is the conversion of a good man, a good woman. Conversion of a religious person. Most difficult. Because, in a measure, they think they deserve some of God's grace. Or, at the very least, they've been working hard enough, say they, week after week after week. Self-righteousness is that kind of sin. Now, the very crowd that your parents told you not to run with, the very crowd that they were the best, but the good people weren't, find a welcome too. In this life, knowing you're loved by the Father. And in a world to come, will you too let your heart be softened to discover the Father's mercy? The Father is the central figure in this story. He is the hero. He is the waiting Father. He is waiting still. He is waiting still for some of us. He is waiting still for you.